This is tape recording number 5705C15HCA Lecture 1, a series of five lectures given by L. Ron Hubbard to the HCA course on the 15th of May 1957. The title of these lectures is Concourse TRs. Each lecture is a 15-minute duration. This side comprises lectures 1 to 4. Copyright 1957 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by HCA Tape Unit, St Hill Manor, East Grinstead, Sussex, England.
I want to welcome you to the communication course. Seems that communication course is necessary as the first step to an auditor. And if an auditor doesn't successfully pass the communication course, then to the end of any career he has as an auditor, there will be something wrong with his auditing. It's very odd that one of the highest levels of indoctrination, tone 40 on an object, is most often unsuccessfully approached by a student at the HPA or HCA level when he has flunked the one I'm going to talk about right now, which is a newcomer's first look inside the academy at communication. And that is Dear Alice, Part A. And it would have amused you the other day to have found a former director of training of an organization being sent back by the HCO Board of Review coach in his coaching to Dear Alice so that he could get good enough to pass tone 40 on an object. But it was absolutely necessary that this happen, because he had, for some reason or other, being an old-timer and having been in it a long time, had never hit Dear Alice. It had been omitted from his training. In spite of all the auditing he'd done and all the experience he'd had, at the end of this time, we find him sitting up in the coaching room, good as gold, perfectly comprehensible, doing Dear Alice, Part A. A man who was probably audited 2,000 or 3,000 hours worth. But everywhere he had difficulty with a preclear, that difficulty stemmed from an inability to do Dear Alice, Part A, which is, in effect, to deliver an auditing command in a unit of time as a completed cycle of action. He delivered an auditing command. Well, now you have to get up to step 2 and even step 3 before you can call it a full cycle of action. But as far as an auditor is concerned, in Dear Alice, Part A only, his job is done when he has delivered an auditing command to a preclear. He didn't deliver it over the hills and far away or to the window. He delivered it to a being. And he delivered it from where he is to where the preclear is. And it's so easy. Anyone to whom this was described briefly, insufficiently, out in the street, would, flunking it at the same time, tell you, of course I can communicate to people. Oh, well, yes, I'm nothing to it. I'm a salesman, you know. I'm a big executive. I run the atomic energy omission. I'm big man. Of course I communicate to everyone. We look in that man's vicinity, and nobody's heard anything he said since the days of Noah's Ark. He never said it to anybody in the first place. He sort of throws things out, you know, and he just hopes they land. Well, that's what passes for communication. And it isn't. Not by a long ways. He throws out a statement of some sort or another, and he thinks he's communicating with somebody. It's a great oddity, but I must confess to you at this moment that the third dynamic is simply an agreement. It is an agreement which people have agreed to, and therefore it has an existence. and we certainly cannot live in this world without it. But it's a violation of the communication formula. The violation of it. The only thing that you can talk to in the final analysis is a living being. And all third dynamics are composed of individual dynamics. And you can summate them, and you can say this is a third dynamic, and that is the agreement on which we go. And it is quite factual, and they are quite actual, unless we stress them with the communication formula, so that you don't talk to all pre-clears. You talk to a pre-clear. There was a fellow by the name of Franklin Delano Roosevelt that never talked to the nation. He never talked to the nation. He talked to an individual citizen. Therefore, he communicated. And there was another fellow who spoke the most beautiful English I have ever heard. Almost incomprehensibly parsed. Perfect. Would have passed any Oxford English professor's most critical look. And that was Herbert Hoover. And I don't think Herbert Hoover ever said hello to a dog. I don't think in his whole life he ever said anything to anybody anywhere. And when this man uttered pronunciamentos, they pronounced nothing to anybody anywhere. Therefore, he couldn't lead a nation out of a depression. He couldn't lead anything anywhere for an excellent reason. He had no concept in the final analysis of talking to an individual, of getting his communication to land right there. Now, this is a touchy point that I open up. You say, well, how about you, Ron? You talk to an awful lot of people. Well, that's the whole secret of Scientology, is I don't talk to an awful lot of people. I talk to you. I haven't any concept of a large multitude that reads my books or listens to my lectures. I can get a multiple concept of talking to a great many people at the same time by talking to every one of them individually. Therefore, I perhaps add a little conceit to the line, but I do communicate. Therefore, someone wanting to know how to speak to a crowd would first begin with Dear Alice, Part A. Someone wanting to influence a vast number of people would, again, first begin with Dear Alice, Part A. So it is very, very far from an unimportant step. It is not just the entrance step that you have to get through to get your communication course over so you can really learn something. That is not what it is. It is the first door that opens. And that door opens when it opens. And it opens when you can communicate a statement from you to a person. We won't worry about a pre-clear. Because really the person in dummy auditing who is sitting there as pre-clear is really a coach, you know. Because you've got to get something across from you to that person. And it has to be from you to that person. It has to be a communication. And when you can do that, well, you're all set. I once told somebody that if he had a very difficult student, not you, but if he had a very, very difficult student, the thing to do with this difficult student would be to put him through 7 weeks of dummy auditing and then teach him in the last week to remedy havingness and turn him loose with a certificate, and it would be a safe investment. We'd be perfectly safe in doing that. But to give him 1 week when he needed two or three on dummy auditing, and then to try to cram him full of data and hope that the processes would carry him through somehow didn't make an auditor. It made a liability both to himself and to pre-clears. So this first step is not just an easy one. It is the toughest step you will perform in Scientology, and that's why it's right at the beginning. It's to say something to somebody with the full confidence that they will receive it. That's quite a trick. All right. How exactly is this done? We give a person a book. The book is Alice in Wonderland. Why Alice in Wonderland? Well, that's just because it is, that's all. No further significance. We give him this book, and he is supposed to find any sentence in that book that he cares to find. These people who just want to read the book consecutively to the preckler are not doing dummy auditing. They, again, are not in communication with the preckler. He's supposed to find a line. Now, he doesn't put Alice said, or the Queen said, or something like that on the line. He just puts the statement itself, you see. Why do they run so fast? Well, the book says, why do they run so fast? The Queen asked. Well, we don't use the Queen asked. We just say, why did they run so fast? All right, he picks that up out of the book. Why out of a book? Why not out of his head? Oh, remember something. In using the English language, you are not using your own ideas. You did not invent the words. You only helped invent the words that compose the English language. You're already using somebody else's ideas. There's nothing wrong with you composing these into new ideas of your own, but remember, you're already using somebody else's ideas when you're speaking English. All right, now let's get it a little bit further. We're given a set pat process. Oh, I know I dreamed it up. I found it one way or the other. But an awful lot of auditors worked with this. It's had a lot of looking at. And it's become phrased in a certain way. And that certain way might very well be taken by you out of the textbook and given to the preclear. And it won't ever work if you do. Do fishes swim is not a therapeutic procedure. It's not. The repetition of it can be very good for an auditor. But it's not a therapeutic procedure. But the statement, do fishes swim, is not yours, really. At the beginning, is it? You got it from the instructor or off of a book? And then you used it. Well, when does it become yours? Well, any idea is yours that you make yours. We won't go along with dialectic materialism and say that no ideas are new, because that's not true. There can be new ideas. But if you get an idea from someone else, it is not still their idea. It's your idea. There's nothing wrong with misowning ideas. There's no mass in them to get you confused. You take an idea out of a book, it becomes your idea. And then as your idea, you relay it to the preclear. And that is all there is to it. It is coached this way. It is not from the book to the preclear. It is from the book to the auditor, and then the auditor, making it his own idea, expresses that idea to the preclear in such a way that it arrives at the preclear. So it's from the auditor to the preclear. But we give him a book as the third via, because most of the material he is going to handle in communication is from a source outside himself. You just got to get used to the idea that there's nothing wrong with using another person's ideas. I always know what somebody's state of learning is in Scientology when they speak of Scientology as your ideas. They say, I've been reading your ideas. I know at once this person can't communicate. It's a great oddity. It's quite wonderful. Because they reveal at once that they cannot take this first basic step of taking an idea and then communicating it to someone else. They are standing back looking at the world in some large sense, and they are not any part of it, because they can't own any of the world's ideas. And if they can't own any of the world's ideas, then they won't own any of the world, because the easiest thing to own is an idea. no mass to impede it. So, we coach just exactly in this way. We want the person to find a phrase in Alice in Wonderland, and then, taking that as his own idea, communicate it directly to the preclear. And he can say it over and over and over, the same phrase if he wishes, in any way he wishes to say it, until the preclear, who is really a coach, tells him that he thinks it's arrived. Now, sometimes the preclear, the first day, feels just a little bit strange about these communication lines, too, and sometimes has his entire criticism based upon the erudition, the pronunciation, the way the auditor holds his little finger while he announces the phrase. This has nothing to do with it. It is the intention that communicates, not the words. And when you have the intention to communicate to the preclear, and that intention goes across, it will arrive. If you're broadcasting that intention, no matter if you're saying it in Chinese, if you're a Scientologist, it'll arrive. One of the steps of a much higher indoctrination level, tone 48C, consists entirely and completely of saying things in funny voice tones while one is communicating an intention, using very odd voice tones. Well, this is not part of Dear Alice. But the voice tones are unimportant. The pronunciation is unimportant. It's whether or not the person could take that idea out of that book, own it, and then communicate it. And the intention must communicate it. And it must be communicated in one unit of time. That is to say, it isn't repeated from the last time it was repeated. It is new, fresh, and communicated in present time. The 55th command of Do Fishes Swim is the 55th, not the first repeated. So we have one unit of time, one command, and the intention. And when we have those things relayed across, then he can find another phrase and communicate that. And that is the way we do that. And I hope you find it helps communication. I want to talk to you about dummy auditing step two, acknowledgement. Dummy auditing step two, acknowledgement, is the second part of the communication cycle. Now, the actual fact, when you have gotten a thought over to a preclear, it is customary to prove it. You see, the preclear says yes, or uh-huh, or does something, and this proves the fact that you've communicated to him. In this whole subject, we could take up such a thing as communication lag. And I'll just mention that in passing to show you that you don't always get a perfect acknowledgement. And communication lag could be the length of time from the moment you ask a question or make a statement to the moment that it is answered or acknowledged. That's the exact length of time that exact question is answered or acknowledged. Now, that would be a communication lag. But right here in dummy auditing step number two, we're not terribly interested in this. It merely enters into doing it. So a communication lag is just a communication lag. And some of you know already about a communication lag, but it is really no part of dummy auditing step two, acknowledgement. It doesn't matter how long one would take in acknowledging. The whole stress of acknowledgement is entirely and completely upon making sure that the preclear receives the auditor's acknowledgement. Now, that is the entire stress. Now, why all this stress on acknowledgement? Well, acknowledgement is a control factor. I'll just let you in on a secret right here at the beginning. If you acknowledge a preclear, well, you will have the preclear under much better control. Now, why? The formula of control is start, change, and stop. Well, we're not particularly worried about that, but you have to know that. You'll run across it soon enough. And that's just this. An acknowledgement is stop. If you said to him, keep going or keep talking, you would not be acknowledging him. The perfect acknowledgement communicates only this. I have heard your communication. So that's all it says. That's all there is to it. I have heard what you said. It signalizes that the preclears, or persons, since Scientology applies to life, just not an auditing room, communication to you has been received. But when you use it as an auditor, you use it also as a control factor. And it says this, your communication has been received, and that is all there is to it, and that is the end of that cycle of action. Thank you. That's what it says, and you have to put that whole intention into a yeah or an okay or anything else you use. It isn't the word, it's the intention that ends it. Your communication has been received, and I have now decided to stop that cycle of communication, and your communication is therefore under my control. Those things which you stop, very crudely, are things which you control. You have to be able to stop things if you control them. If you cannot control a preclear's communication line, you can't control the preclear. Give me some example of this. Now, let's say we're auditing, Mrs. Gottrocks, the wife of the executive manager of flea bite dust powder or something. And she's bored. The only thing wrong with her, and she's crazy. That's the only other thing wrong with her. And she never had anything to do, and she's just been lying around. And she has ailments. So she comes into the auditing room, and she starts to talk to you. She says, I've been to this specialist, that specialist. It costs this much money and that much money, and I've been here, and I've been there, and I've been that, and what's really wrong with me, and what you really should take up is this, and so on. Blah, 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 blah. It's none of your business. The longer you let such a person talk, the less havingness they have. You actually can actually watch a person run his havingness right down to the bottom. You can watch him go straight down the ARC tone scale if you keep on letting them talk. Obsessive communication. Obsessive outflow. And the first major use that you will make of this, the first time that you really understand what this acknowledgement is all about, is when somebody starts this on you and starts talking, 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 and you want to get a session started, and you get the intention real good, and you say to them, good, and they stop talking. Your intention was such that they knew that you had received their communication. And if you can do this very well, if you can get that acknowledgement in just right, and if it does exactly what it's supposed to do, very often a person will look at you fixedly and say, you know, I don't think anybody has ever heard me before. Why is this person talking obsessively? Is they're trying to make up in quantity what they lack in audience. There's nobody listening to them. They're not talking to anyone. And you all of a sudden come up with an acknowledgement and say, hey, I heard you. I heard that. You have communicated to me. And that's it now. I say, wow. I don't think I've ever talked to anybody before. Now, it's quite amazing. You don't have to address this to an obsessive outflow. That isn't a general use, that's merely a specialized stunt. And I say that's the first time you will recognize this, because that's the first major effect that you will run into in the outside world with the use of acknowledgement. I have seen an auditor on an obsessive outflow case get down in front of the preclear, fix him with an eye, move his finger back and forth, just in front of the preclear's nose, and say, good, I heard that. And have the preclear all of a sudden say, ooh, Gee. You are there, aren't you? So a good acknowledgement actually can wind up the entire goal of the process, find the auditor. That's how important it is. Now that is a specialized use, stopping a compulsive outflow. Its general use is putting a period to the communication cycle. It ends the moment of time in which you gave the command you learned how to give, we hope, in Dear Alice, Part A. You said something, the preclear heard it, and we understood then that the preclear had heard it, and we said, good. Now, the exact way Dear Alice, Part B, is done, which is dummy auditing step number two, the exact way that is done is this way. The coach, or person acting as a preclear, takes Dear Alice and reads random phrases out of Dear Alice. And having read the phrase in any old way, we don't care how. We're not disciplining the preclear, you know. We never do that. We merely control them within an inch of their lives. But in this particular case, this person says something out of Alice in Wonderland, and the auditor has to say, good, fine, okay, I heard that, anything, in such a way as to actually convince the person who is sitting there acting as the preclear that he has heard it. Now, we couldn't care less how the auditor does it. You say, is there a specific way to do this? Yes, there is a specific way to do this. That's to intend that the communication cycle ends at that point, and to end it there. Now, anything that you do to make that come about is, of course, legitimate, unless it utterly destroys ARC. But it finishes a cycle of communication. So what could the auditor in this case do? See, there sits the auditor, no book. There sits the preclear with a book, just reversed from the first day. And the preclear is reading, and the Mad Hatter dipped his watch into the teapot. And the auditor says, good. But that ends that, you see. Now, in view of the fact that the preclear is reading a continued story, which goes on sentence after sentence after sentence, the auditor will have a tendency to treat this as in passing. And that's not an acknowledgement. The auditor could say, well, read some more. That's not an acknowledgement. Didn't stop it, did it? Continue. Go ahead. No, you see, that's not an acknowledgement at all. The acknowledgement says, stop. Whoa. Air brakes. Period. End. Heard you. You've communicated. That's the end of that moment of time. Final cycle. That's it. You've had it. You get that? That's it. So he's got to say, good, fine, okay, in such a way as to receive the communication in the preclear's eyes. Okay? The preclear's got to know that the auditors receive the communication, and that's the only point on which they're coached at first. Then we could start to bear down and say, well, did you acknowledge that preclear's communication? Did you? We could say, as an instructor. And the auditor says, yeah. Did you do a perfect acknowledgement? Oh, certainly. And the answer to that would be no. Preclear's still reading. Still got the book in his hands, still going on with it, still sitting in the chair, and still not in this universe. What is this all about? What are we actually trying to do? Well, we're not trying to reach the ultimate in an acknowledgement, because that would be the end of the universe. If somebody could say yes, good, or okay, with enough intention behind it, all communications of this universe from the moment of its beginning would then be acknowledged totally. Except this would violate the communication form because they weren't all addressed to him, although lots of people think they were. See, that acknowledgement is a stop. Whoa, that ends it. That finishes it. Now, what does the auditor actually feel called upon to do? Well, he feels called upon to put a period to that cycle of communication. It actually started, you see, yesterday with the auditor's phrase to the preclear. Then the preclear signified with some kind of a wince or a grunt or something that it had been heard. And then the auditor says, well, that's the end of that. Good. Fine. I finished that. You see? And we're just doing the other side of it. We're doing these in parts so that you'll get used to handling each one of these parts. And we'll do them all together later on. But an acknowledgement ends the cycle of the communication, which you read about in Dianetics 1955. And that is the Joe, Bill, Bill, Joe cycle. Good, says the auditor. Well, this is fantastic. I mean, if you got good enough at this, traffic cop would drive up and say something to you, and you would acknowledge the fact that he had spoken, and he would simply get back on his bike or go back to the station house and turn in his badge and retire. You see, that'd be the end of that. That would be it. As a matter of fact, it actually staggers people to have an acknowledgement receive. You know, an acknowledgement come to them. Staggers them. To really get it through. People who are having a hard time and so forth particularly. But it's a good thing, and it's very therapeutic for a person to know that he's been acknowledged. I know now that you will be around in the local stores and maybe stopping a pedestrian on the street, suddenly looking at them and saying, good. Acknowledge them. And you will have some fantastic things occur if you did that. Acknowledgement is a very, very powerful 16-inch gun in the communication formula. And you shouldn't use it sparingly. You should use it to end cycles of communication. I hope you learn to do that very, very well. Thank you. And I want to talk to you now about dummy auditing, step number 3. And this interesting dummy auditing step has a villainous and vicious go. It is a very, very bad dummy auditing step. It makes somebody duplicate. Perhaps the genesis of this step was way back in 50. And we found out that auditors, in order to be interesting, would vary their patter. And every time the patter was varied, every time the auditing command changed, the preclear received a little jolt. There was an upset because of it. A long time ago, we would have considered it fairly legitimate for an auditor using the auditing command, do fish or swim, to say, by the way, do finny creatures wiggle in the water? And next time say, does the finny tribe bathe? And next time say, what brands of fishes are there progress from point A to point B in liquid habitats? That would possibly have been legitimate. We don't do that today. We do a horrible thing. We say, the auditor says, do fishes swim? And just to vary it, he then says, do fishes swim? And just for good wild variation, he says, do fishes swim? Now, you'll find that at first, it is necessary for you to vary your voice tones in order to keep each command separate. And this is where we learn why we were so insistent on one command in one moment of time back in Dear Alice, Part A. Because we don't repeat the first Do Fishes Swim another 1,000 times. No auditing command should ever depend for any of its meaning on any other auditing command ever uttered. Each one exists theoretically and purely in its own moment of time and is uttered itself in present time with its own intention. This is quite important. Do you know that the basic auditing process of CCH does not work unless each command is in a separate unit of time? And that's a silly thing like, give me your hand, thank you. And if you run it this way, give me your hand, thank you, 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 give me your hand, thank you. It's not therapeutic. You know, nothing happens to the preclear. Why? Well, we've got a machine which is repeating the first, give me your hand. We have a machine. And this machine is simply repeating it over and over and over and over. We're not saying it. There's no intention there. Do you know that if you told somebody to give you his hand with enough intention behind it, do you know that his body would respond to it without any via through the thetan? In other words, you said to somebody, give me your hand. The body obeys. Obeys the intention. Body doesn't obey the words. Body obeys the intention to extend the hand. Quite interesting. Therefore, each auditing command must be in its own unit of time. And when you are asked to express an auditing command with the same words over and over and over, each time you must express it in present time as itself with its intention. It isn't just a long duplication of it. But just duplicating something over and over and over is sometimes so trying that people wonder how auditors ever arrive at all. It would just be impossible. Nobody could sit in a chair and say each time with a new intention, do fishes swim for 75 hours. Nobody could do this. It's beyond human possibility, according to some people. But the trick is that if it's always uttered in present time, it could be said for 1,075 hours. It's only when it's repeated, only when the first command is repeated over and over, when no new intention arrives, that it becomes very arduous. Only when it goes on to a machine does it become almost impossible to do. Communication is reached by control plus duplication. At first, you will find that to make each utterance of the command different in its own unit of time, you will use different voice inflections. Do fishes swim? Do fishes swim? Do fishes swim? Do fishes swim? And that will tell you that each one was different than the last. But as you come up and come up the line on this, you will find out that you actually could pattern the same tone and each time have it entirely new. It would be very incorrect, very, very incorrect to teach this, to have the auditor each time duplicate his own voice tones as they were the last time. Because that's making an auditing command depend on the last auditing command. We couldn't care less. After a while, you couldn't care less either what voice tone you're uttering it in, but each intention is new and fresh. The intention is to ask and get an answer to this question, do fishes swim? Then each time you utter it, it is uttered newly and in its own area of time. Do you understand that? That's really the only stress there is. One command per unit of time. each command separate, and each command containing the words, quite incidentally, to fish a swim. Now here we get our first little look at duplication, and here we learn a great deal about the actual duplicative factors of communication. We find out that in having to duplicate, we think, we actually lose some of the communication at first. You know, it's utterly idiotic. How could you possibly maintain ARC, and therefore, of course, interest, asking a person over and over this silly question, do fishes swim? Do fishes swim? Do fishes swim? Do fishes swim? Over and over and over and over and over. Who could do this? Well, actually, interest in communication has everything to do with the intention to be interesting and very little to do with text. Now, furthermore, it is not the auditor's job to be interesting. That's not going to become that'll be a horrible shock to you one day when you suddenly realize that. Being interesting is a part of the communication formula, but to an auditor, the least possible part, as far as the preclear is concerned. He's not there to interest and intrigue the preclear. Right away, people think they are. They place two people in chairs facing each other. These two people. Each one feel the compulsion to be interesting to the other. That's not auditing. That's being interesting. That's being social. So on. So if a person has any difficulty doing step three, do fishes swim, actually the instructor would be perfectly in order if he simply told the person to sit in that chair and told some other student who wasn't doing too well, or just some other student, to sit in the other chair and told them to just sit there and look at each other without saying a thing or being embarrassed or anything else. Interesting drill, if you think of it. This actually undercuts dummy auditing step number one. But we do have variation and therefore interest in the first and second dummy auditing steps. But now we reach this one, and it is utterly devoid of interest. We're saying the same thing over and over and over and over and over. And if a person can't do this, he probably has the compulsion to vary, to alter his, to be interesting. And he wouldn't be able to do easily this one. Just sit in a chair and face another human being and not say a word and not do a thing, but just sit there and look at the other human being. And if I were coaching someone who had difficulty in repetition of steps, I'm afraid that I would do that for an hour or two of that day. All right. It is absolutely necessary that an auditor be able to duplicate. But answer me this. Is a person who is saying something in present time each time really duplicating the last moment of time? He really isn't, is he? And so this duplication that we do in Scientology means only the ability to apparently duplicate while being in present time. The greatest motto of experience and the life we have lived is this, a big motto that people have, is I won't ever do that again. The one thing your mama wanted you to promise, if you did nothing else, if you lived a completely sinful life, mama still wanted you to learn by experience, which is to say that when you did something wrong, or did something, you weren't ever to do it again. She hoped perhaps you would eat enough candy to make you so sick that you wouldn't wolf candy again. to eat enough ice cream so that ice cream would make you green enough so that you wouldn't make a pig of yourself over ice cream again. So that you would become so embarrassed and lose enough friends so that you would not do that evil thing again, whatever it was you did, and thus learn by experience never to do it again. And this is experience talking. One thing you must understand that experience teaches you is never to do anything the second time. This doesn't necessarily mean that all experience is painful, but people who are having a hard time tend to believe that it is. And when they begin to depend upon experience and stand by this lesson of never doing it again, they can no longer duplicate. And what do you know? They can't communicate. Also, their bank jams. All sorts of interesting things occur. All moments become one moment. One moment becomes all moments. Identification takes place all over the place. And just the action of repeating something like, do fishes swim, as an auditor with the full intention, remembering what we already learned in Dummy Auditing Step 1 and Dummy Auditing Step 2, has tendency to unjam the time track, has tendency to do a lot of interesting things, which you should know that that's what it's going up against. It is violating all of that hard-won experience that you have accumulated in the last 76 trillion years. If you believe in E-meter, you're 76 trillion years old. And all that hard-won experience, all that wonderful, wonderful lot of mess that you got into, added up completely to never do it again. And so you've been taught not to live, which is what happens when you get experience. And when you can duplicate an auditing command over and over again, you will find out that auditing does not become a painful experience. A person who can do this well, by the way, never gets restimulated. Why should he? He's not in the moment of time in which the restimulation took place. There's a more basic step to this particular one, by the way, which is to pat the wall 5 times and then distinguish one of the pats from the rest. An instructor can do that on a student with some profit. Pretty soon the student can tell all 5 pats apart. And when the student can tell them all apart, even though they sounded all the same, he can also duplicate an auditing command in present time all the way. I've broken cases with that one, by the way. And so we have dummy auditing, step number 3. And in spite of the duplication taking place, each time we want the command newly uttered, in present time, and we want the command to reach the preclear. And of course we acknowledge, as we learned how to do yesterday. Thank you. Dummy auditing, step number 4, handling originations. The 4th thing an auditor has to do in that order is to handle an origin from a PC. It's actually true that when you are handling tone 40 processes, you do not handle the PC's originations. That is very true. But if you will look on the HCA, HPA chart, the chart of the long course, you will find something quite interesting. You will find that these tone 40 processes are in the minority amongst processes. And in all processes, not tone 40, a PC's originations are handled. Remember that. Don't let anybody talk you out of it. If you're handling tone 40, which is just pure positive postulating, you, of course, are not worried about anybody's opinion, origin, condition, or anything else. You simply want him to do certain things, and he finds out that his beingness can be controlled, and therefore that he can control it. We are really not controlling people. We're positive postulating, really. Because we are not going to punish them if they don't do what we say, and most men understand that as control. And so in these very, very high-toned processes, we do not handle the origin of the preclear. Well, what do we mean by an origin of the preclear? He volunteers something all on his own, and do you know that's an index of case? That's a very good index of case. Does the person volunteer anything on his own? Old-time auditor uses this, by the way, as a case index. He said, this fellow isn't getting any better. He hasn't offered up anything yet. See, he didn't originate. He didn't originate communication. You know, that's the hardest thing to get an organization to do, to originate a communication. You actually could work in the direction of getting a pre-clear to originate a communication in spite of the fact that you just previously were running him on tone 40 processes. The fellow, he originated the communication that his arms and legs felt like they were just going to fall off. You said, give me your hand. Thank you. My head's cutting off now. I know it's going to fall off. Give me your hand. Thank you. Good tone 40. But on control of person, the first two processes are tone 40, but book mimicry, and the next process up the line from it, hand space mimicry, are not tone 40. And originations by the preclear are not only handled, they are encouraged. So remember that we have not lost out of the galaxy of processes the fact that the preclear is as well as he can originate a communication. That means he can stand at cause on the communication formula. And that's a desirable point for him to reach. You see, in controlling people, we are really only showing them that they can be controlled, that it is possible for their possessions to be controlled, don't you see? And then they eventually decide that these are controllable, and that people are controllable, and things are controllable, and their body's controllable, and they say, wonderful. Wonderful. Look, I'll try. And before that, they didn't even try. So we're controlling a person's possessions or body only until this person, then himself, decides to take a hand in it too. And then he finds out that control is possible. But most people don't originate. Circuits originate. Computers originate. Compulsive outflows originate. When you first start to use tone 40 on a person, you will apparently see originations. But they are not originations. They are re-stimulations being dramatized. There's a big difference between a re-stimulation being dramatized and an origination. It's whether or not the Thetan said it. Did he say it? Or was it just a circuit starting up? Well, you can start up circuits and actually throw them into being, and you will see that these are not originations. But when an origination appears in anything but a tone 40 process, you handle it. You handle it, and you must handle it well and conclusively. There are preclears who have had astonishing things happen to them, who have tried to communicate them to the auditor, who have failed to do so, and have then sunk into apathy. And it's gone right on out of session because their communication origination was not handled properly by the auditor. There are instances of this in many of them. Tone 40 processes do not particularly violate this. An understanding of what they are takes place rather rapidly with the preclear, and he doesn't expect you to. But if he is really getting up, if he's graduated into being a human being, and he's getting up there, and he originates something, you answer it. Now, he's liable to say the most astonishing things to him. And if you don't handle them, he's liable to drop into apathy about the whole thing. So you must handle them well, because they're always unexpected. I would say that unexpectedness actually should be part of the definition of an origination. Because they're quite often completely off the subject. They take you completely by surprise. They're apparently not at all what you expected him to say. You know, the fellow says, I'm 8 feet back of my head. Well, what do you do? In the old days, we might have gone right on to Route 1. We don't today. We handle the origination. He says, the whole back of my head feels like it's on fire. Well, once upon a time, an auditor, used to be an old technical phrase, by the way, he Q&A'd. In other words, he did what the preclear did. Anytime the preclear changed, the auditor changed. That's the deadliest crime in auditing. Preakler changes because he's being processed, and the auditor changes the process. Q&A, you see, the Preakler changed, the auditor changed. Well, that isn't what you do. He says, the back of my head's on fire. Once upon a time, we might have handled this. We might have gone right in there and said, oh, that's very good. We finally gotten a somatic on this fellow, and we would have handled it in some fashion or other and questioned him about it and audited it and so forth. Well, we found out that this stuck people on the time track, so therefore we do not do that anymore. So what do we do when he says, the back of my head's on fire? Do we ignore it? Well, we're running tone 40 processes. We ignore it. But if we're auditing any other process, of which there are many in CCH, we handle the origin. And an auditor who has not been trained to do this will very often find himself very embarrassed. But how about in the walk-away world, huh? The world that is ambulant and moving around and spinning quietly or noisily, as the case may be. Do you ever have to handle an origin in it? Well, I'll dare say that every argument you've ever gotten into was because you did not handle an origin. Every time you ever got into trouble with anybody, you can trace it back on the track and find out there was an origination someplace along the lines you didn't handle. The person walked in, he said, whee! He said, I've just passed with the highest mark in the whole school. And you say, you know, I'm awfully hungry. Shouldn't we go out and eat? You'll find yourself in a fight. He feels ignored. He originated a communication to have you prove to him that he was there and he was solid. Most little kiddies get frantic about their parents when their parents don't handle their originations properly. Because handling an origination merely tells the person, all right, I heard it, you're there. You might say it's a sort of a form of acknowledgement, but it's not. It's the communication formula in reverse. But the auditor's still in control if he handles the origin. Otherwise, the communication formula goes out of his control, and he is at effect point, no longer at cause point. An auditor continues at cause point. So, let's look this over. The handling of an origin has a great deal of use, and it, until recently, was the least pat step in Scientology. How did you handle an origin? And we finally found out, I finally had cognition myself, because I tried for a long time to communicate this to people. And they still blundered on it occasionally. And finally found out something that did seem to communicate. There are three steps in handling an origin. You're saying, do fishes swim? You see, here's the setup. The Preakler is sitting in the chair, and the auditor is sitting across the Preakler, and the auditor is saying, do fishes swim or do birds fly? And the Preakler says, yes. And by the way, I had somebody very upset one time. He said, do birds fly? And I said, no. And you know, I threw the auditor completely out of session. Really remarkable. He didn't expect that one at all. He immediately went into an argument with me concerning the aerodynamic capabilities of birds. Of course, it once flunked. Now, here is this factor. Now, entering. Do fishes swim? Preakler answers. Do fishes swim? Preakler doesn't answer. Do fishes swim? The Preakler says, you know, your dress is on fire. Or I'm 8 feet back of my head? Or is it true that all cats weigh 1.8 kilograms? See? Wog, wog. Where did this come from? Well, although it's usually circuitry or something like that at work when it's that far off beam, it is nevertheless an origin. How do you handle it? Well, you don't want the Preakler to go out of session, and he would if you handled it wrongly. So, one, you answer it. Two, you maintain ARC briefly. But you maintain ARC. You don't spend any time at it, but you just maintain ARC. And three, you get the Preakler back on the process. One, two, three. You spend too much time in two, and you'll be doing wrong. You say, what is an origin? All right, he says, I'm 8 feet back of my head. That's an origin. What are you supposed to do with it? Well, you're supposed to answer it. In this particular case, you would say to him something on the order of, you are. I mean, that's, I've heard the communication, you know. It's made an effect on me, you know. You are. Now, in maintaining ARC, you can skimp that second one if you handle the third one expertly enough. The least important one is the second one. But the most deadly thing you can do is to utterly neglect the second one of maintaining ARC. That's deadly. But you can skimp it if you really punch it into the third one, which is to say getting back into session. So he says, I'm 8 feet back of my head. You say, you are. You know, it's got a bing, you know. It, what he said really, really hits, you know. He's kind of wog-wog about this. He's not sure what this is all about. You are. And the fellow says, yes. Well, you say, well, what did I say that made that happen? Well, you said to fishes, you said to birds fly, and I thought of myself as a bird, and I guess that's the way it is, you know. But I have 8 feet back of my head. You say, well, it's pretty routine. Reassuring, you know, maintain the ARC is pretty routine. Now, what was that auditing question there? I thought, oh, you asked me, do birds fly? You said, that's right. Well, do birds fly? Back in session. Okay. You can't can this. You can't put it into a can and put a label on it and say, this is how you do it always, because it's always something peculiar. But you can say these three steps are followed. I'll give you an example. The fellow says, you say, do birds fly? And he says, I have a blinding headache. You say, you do. Is it bothering you? That's the ARC. Too much to carry on with the session? And you reach number three at once, you see. Oh, no. It's pretty bad, though. You say, well, let's go on with it, shall we? Maybe it'll do something with it, maintaining ARC. He says, well, all right. And you're right back onto it again. Do birds fly? One of the trickiest ones of these is, what in my question reminded you of that? The fellow says, well, it wasn't very much, you know, and just so and so. He explains it to you, and you say, well, good. Do birds fly? And you're right back in session again. You got the idea? Three parts, and that's the important thing. You have to learn how to handle these things. The instructor provides the, quote, pre-clear, unquote, with a list of unexpectednesses that he springs on the auditor. Now, at the same time that we are doing this, we can get much more complicated, particularly toward the end of that session, by just trying out a communication bridge. And the communication bridge from do birds fly to do fishes swim, and from do fishes swim back to do birds fly. A communication bridge is a very easy thing. It simply closes off the process you were running, maintains ARC, and opens up the new process on which you are about to embark. And if you could look at it as two V's, the points facing each other with a line between the bottoms of the two V's, you got the idea, you would see that one process which you have been running is closed on down to nothing easily by gradients. You say, how about running this just three or four more times and then we'll quit, okay? We give you warning, you see. We're closing the process off. We do run it three or four more times. Then we say, well, how are you doing? We never ask people, by the way, how do you feel? This as is having this. We say, how are you doing? And he said, well, not too badly, and so on. Well, anything happen there while we were running do fishes swim? Anything happen while we were running that? And he says, well, I don't know. I got a little bit of reality. I think I felt like fish for a couple of moments there. Well, you, how do you do it? I feel now about that, so on. It's okay? You're doing all right, are you? And he says, well, he says, not too badly. So, well, let's go over on to do birds fly. It's an interesting process, and it just goes like this. I ask you, do birds fly? And you answer me. And how about running that? And he said, well, all right, okay. You establish the agreement again, and away we go. Actually, it's three contracts in a row. And the contract is to stop the process we're running. The next contract is we are in an auditing session, binding this, you know, as a continuing auditing session. And the third contract is simply, we have a new process we would like to run, and I want your signature on this dotted line that you will run it. That actually is communication bridge, and so we shift from one to the other of these two things. The reason we do this is so a preclear will not be startled by change. And if we change too rapidly in a session, we stick the preclear in the session every time. Particularly some preclear is pretty wog-wog. It gets very stuck. We say, do birds fly? Do birds fly? Do birds fly? Do fishes swim? We give him a chance to recover. In other words, we give him some warning. And that's what a comm bridge is for. The handling of origins, however, is the most important one of this one, because we could leave it up to the HPA-HCA instructor to polish you off on comm bridges if you weren't perfect. And I don't think anybody will ever get completely perfect onto a comm bridge. Comm bridges are not things of great perfection, since preclears are always somewhat disturbed the moment a person departs from a duplication. And remember, a comm bridge still does that. But you learn how to handle origins, you'll never be taken by surprise by a preclear. You'll be right in there pitching. The session will keep on. I've seen an auditor sit with his mouth open. Oh, for 20, 30 seconds after some preclear has said something fantastic. He just doesn't know what to make of it, what to do with it. Well, you answer it, you maintain ARC, and you get him back in session.